Welcome back, new talkers. So these days you hear a lot of terms thrown around in politics. Everybody has a label. Every kind of politics has some kind of label. There's usually populist in front of some descriptive term like Republican or Democrat, populist conservative, nationalist conservative, those kinds of things. There's all sorts of words that supposedly describe things, but really just serve to confuse people. And in this podcast, I want to examine the idea, or really just ask it as a question. Is the United States collectivized to the point where you could say that it has been essentially socialist for a long time already? We're going to talk about that in podcast 625. Now, very quickly, you've heard me talk about Ryan Plumbing and Heating for AC checks and everything else. We're not going to get anywhere near 70 for the next few weeks, so I don't need to talk about that. Maybe 3 or 4 weeks, probably, at least consistently, and it needs to be 70 to have Ryan check your AC. But I've been talking about water bills lately, and water bills are going up for local towns and cities and townships and things of that nature. And if you have a leaky water heater, a leaky toilet, or a leaky faucet somewhere, you may not know it. And I was shocked when Greg Ryan said, you know, a leak on a faucet that you may not be able to hear, or a leak in a water heater that you may not be able to hear, or a leak in a toilet that you may not be able to hear, can rapidly add up to gallons, which can drive your water bill up. And so if you have a high water bill, you ought to have Ryan Plumbing and Heating come out and check everything to make sure that you're not leaking water, silently, that you're the silent killer when it comes to your water bill. So here's what you do. Check out RyanPlumbing.com. You can find out about the services that they do there. The numbers are there and everything else. I'll give you the numbers, but check out RyanPlumbing.com or call 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go back 4 generations. They go to all parts of the metro, suburbs, and the city. They do residential and business, and really that's basically it. I was shocked at how much a person's water bill can be affected by leaks that you may not even know that you have. Check out RyanPlumbing.com or call Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, even the simple stuff that can make a big difference in your budget. Residential and business, Ryan Plumbing in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. On the other side of the river, 612-927-6488 or RyanPlumbing.com. Well, warmer weather means motorcycles, and it's very important to see motorcycles, which is why I've been talking about Ciro 3D, especially the lighting options and solutions from this great motorcycle products and accessories company. Click on the banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com and see what they can do for you with LED rear lighting, shock and eye lighting systems, and front lights that really help people to see you. Happy spring and ride safe. Ciro3D.com. Click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. What I've been doing lately is monitoring social media, monitoring the news, reading all the stories and the commentary about what's going on. And here's what I've seen a lot of, and I don't need to give you an example because you know what I mean. A lot of, and I actually may give an example, but a lot of reactionary writing and posts and discussion about things that are going on and whether this side is right or that side is right. And everybody is entering a certain point, like they'll throw up a post or say, and I've talked about this in the media podcasts, that this person really gave it to this congressman at this town hall meeting. And or someone will say, this whole thing with this particular ad, or this congresswoman said this yesterday, so this proves that she's a terrible person, or whatever. And those are exaggerations, but sometimes not. And that serves for discourse about politics. But I want to talk about the idea that, and I should ask it as a question, as I said earlier, this question of whether the United States has been collectivized and essentially socialist for a long time. Now, again, these are my opinions. This is certainly not an academic study. If you brought something like that up, if you said the United States is socialist, or if you asked an academic if the United States is socialist, particularly a political science professor, they would tell you that you can't say that the United States is socialist for 100 reasons. I'm just offering this as an opinion. Maybe what you should do is suspend disbelief and argument and just listen and think about it. I think we are too reactionary, and I think we don't think enough about the structure of our government and the direction of our government, and not really the government so much as us as citizens and our body politic in this country. We tend to watch stories and listen to stories or read stories about things that have happened and what that means, or what this politician is going to propose, or what that politician is going to propose, that type of thing. I don't need to go through that in detail, because I've already done that in many, many podcasts. I'm not going to do that to you. So what I've been doing lately is, instead of doing that, because everybody's doing that, I'm not going to do it, I've been just talking about stuff that occurs to me to talk about. And sometimes it comes from conversation. Sometimes it comes from stuff that I'm reading. In this particular instance, it came from a couple of different things: conversations, thoughts, reflections on some of the stuff that I've been reading lately about European history and U.S. history, and just trying to figure out what kind of podcast I want to do. So I had a conversation recently with friends, and they are not Republicans, and they live in an area in my town where a light rail line is being proposed. In my experience, light rail was one of those ideas that you did if you're of certain political persuasion, because it's the right thing to do, as long as it isn't running through your backyard. This is the first time that I have seen Democrats and liberal, quote-unquote liberals, really get up in arms about something the government was doing that they generally would have agreed with. I was at this party, and it was on the 12th floor of this high-rise building. And what's happening, just to give you a little background, is the people who live in this building pay a lot of rent. They're high rent payers. They're, you know, high income people. And they've lived in this building for a long time, different apartments, and new ownership has taken over the building. What's happening is the Southwest Light Rail in Minneapolis is proposed to run right through this little triangle. And so the new company is developing four or five new apartment buildings next to this high rise, and they're moving people around, and people are upset. So it's the experience of a whole group of high-end renters who are suddenly furious at the city and developers and the light rail. And I should mention that light rail usually comes with subsidies for developers to build apartment buildings alongside of the rail, and it's all centrally planned through what we have here called the Met Council, which is the largest central planning metropolitan body and the most powerful central planning council in a metropolitan area in the United States, also the most expensive. And I was talking to this gentleman who lived in the building, and we were looking out over this section of town that is kind of dense, but it isn't like, it looks like, I don't know, New Jersey dense, not Manhattan dense, and certainly not San Francisco dense, not even downtown Minneapolis or St. Paul dense, but denser than it has been in the last 25 or 30 years. And he said, "We can't live like this anymore. We have to get rid of cars and have trains." So this is kind of interesting, because I didn't really argue with him. I just kind of let it kind of lay there. But it's interesting, because suddenly you have this difference of opinion on the left, and it made me think about a lot of things. Now, I have a lot of friends who are Republicans who rail on the government. They complain about all sorts of government programs, welfare, the SNAP program, which is the Agricultural Department, food stamp thing, public housing, aid to immigrants. And yet there are so-called entitlements Democrats and Republicans alike depend on at a certain point in their life: Social Security, Medicare, veterans benefits, and subsidies both Democrats and Republicans alike depend on: the home mortgage tax credit, agricultural benefits, veterans benefits, VA first-time home buyer loans. You don't have to be a veteran to get them. You just have to be a first-time home buyer. I certainly have benefited from that. Public worker pensions, 401k programs and other tax deferral investments, which subsidize investments, many, many more programs that are supposed to be to help people, but they also have another side. All of these mandated through acts of Congress over the years. Now, I didn't even mention state grant programs, aid for vocational training, education grants, student loans, subsidies for business. All of these things touch almost every American in some way, shape, or form. Then we get to government contracts, up to and including construction for roads and bridges and schools and light rail and stadia, contractors of all kinds for public institutions, money flowing from state and federal coffers to companies and individuals for services, nonprofits competing with profits. If you ask people what the number one employer in their respective state is, more than likely they will name one of the state's big businesses. Now, in some states, if it's Walmart, they're going to be right. But for the most part, most states, an institution, a public institution, is the largest employer. I live in Minnesota. The number one employer by far in Minnesota is the Mayo Clinic. People do not know the Mayo Clinic is not a for-profit company. This is the gold standard health provider, and they are surprised when you tell them that Mayo is a nonprofit. In fact, Mayo gets $400 million a year from the federal government for research. It's the largest employer in the state of Minnesota. Same is true in Maryland with Johns Hopkins. They get a ton of federal aid and state aid, and Johns Hopkins is the largest employer in Maryland. The second largest employer in Minnesota is the state of Minnesota. The third largest is the federal government. We have to go to fourth before we get to Target Corporation, which is very much into all sorts of subsidies and work with the state and cities. They got a large subsidy to move their headquarters to downtown Minneapolis at one point, and now they're moving people out of there to different campuses. If you look at Texas, the largest employer in Texas is the University of Texas at Houston. At least they have Shell Deep Water, a corporation, number two, but number four is the University of Texas at Austin. You can check out your state, but you'll be surprised. You have to be careful because most of the time, a lot of these lists are qualified by private, public. If you want both, you have to basically search for both because you'll get a list and it will say either these are private companies that are the top five private companies in your state, and it doesn't give you the list of the nonprofits. They try to avoid that. Much like in radio, how the public radio stations aren't shown in the ratings, but the public radio stations are often in the top five in almost every demo in big cities these days, and people just don't believe it when you tell them that. In many cases, a little bit more research, you'll find out that nonprofits, public institutions, or healthcare, which is generally funded by Medicare, Medicaid, ACA, et cetera, is the largest employer in your state. Now, you might think that that is a stretch, and maybe it is, but I'm making the stretch to show how much government money filters down to the so-called businesses that we assume are capitalist in nature. A generally accepted definition of the word socialism is this: a political and economic theory of social organization that advocates that the means of production, distribution, and exchange should be owned or regulated by the community as a whole. Now, this does not say socialism isn't democratic, that it isn't a system that excludes the individual. It doesn't say that socialism is a tyranny or dictatorship. There are many socialist democracies in the world. They're perfectly nice places to live. Some say that China is socialist. I don't necessarily agree with that. You'll hear why shortly. China is, well, we'll get to it in a second. But okay, you've got Denmark, Finland, the Netherlands, Canada, Sweden, Norway, Ireland, New Zealand, Belgium, socialist market economies, which is what China is, includes Singapore, where all land is owned by the government, which then supplies 85% of the housing, and 22% of the national GDP in Singapore is from government-owned companies. You will often hear people in certain circles, usually on the left, describe the United States as capitalist. They'll say, I've heard them say it many times, we're a capitalist country in this country, and we always will be. I don't agree that the United States is a capitalist country anymore. I think the United States was a capitalist country up to a certain point, maybe 125 years ago. But I think today we are a socialist market economy due to the fact that federal, state, and local governments have so many regulations, controls, taxes, and aid that the government effectively controls the means of production. So this would suggest that with so much government in America, the people effectively control most production. We will certainly still elect leaders, congressmen and senators and governors and state representatives, judges and so forth. We're still a republic, but the government has too much to do with the means of production for me not to say, why? How are we that different from China or Canada or the Netherlands? What are the primary differences, from some of those things? Yeah, certainly some of those governments own oil and so forth, but I'm submitting that today the government doesn't have to own the means of production to control it. The government merely has to, control it through regulation and other means. And one could argue that since, for example, government property is such a big part of the U.S. government's holdings, and, for example, when it comes to oil, they have to lease out federal lands to be drilled for oil, then one would suggest that in that case, the state does own the means of production. They own the land that the oil is being pulled from. So it's a stretch, but consider today's capitalist hero. This is the man that is often compared to Andrew Carnegie or John D. Rockefeller. This is the man people say, oh, he's just amazing, Elon Musk. The Los Angeles Times recently reported that Musk's companies, Tesla Motors Incorporated, SolarCity, Space Exploration Technologies Corporation, known as SpaceX, together have benefited from an estimated $4.9 billion in government support. He's building a new battery plant, which is supposed to be this amazing place that's been built with a number of subsidies. Carnegie is known today as a philanthropist, and he built his fortune starting to work as a boy, working his way up and investing, eventually forming the U.S. Steel Company, which when he sold it for $200 million made him one of the world's richest men, and then he proceeded to give his money away. But people don't remember his years as an entrepreneur. Rockefeller was an oil refinery, built an empire, investing in consolidating refineries at a time when the oil business was just beginning. He was not an oil driller, not a wildcat type guy. When the government broke up Standard Oil of Ohio, Rockefeller owned interest in all of the pieces, which then became even larger as refineries, and that's when he earned his real fortune. A more modern example of a capitalist would be Marc Andreessen, who developed the first web browser, Mosaic, and co-founded Netscape, and has backed Groupon, Instagram, and Airbnb, among others. He is an entrepreneur, software engineer, and investor. These guys are a lot different from Elon Musk, who has received $4.5 billion in U.S. subsidies. That's what I mean by the government controlling the means of production. Springtime is car shopping time, generally speaking, and I was just over at X Government Cars checking out the selection at 2420 Nevada Avenue North in Golden Valley. X Government Cars, first of all, is Minnesota's only dealer specializing in one-owner, professionally maintained government fleet cars, trucks, and SUVs. You know that. You know that if you need a car, if you need a loan, if you have a job, you can get approved. You know that they pay the highest values without all the bull. You know that they have the three-day love-it guarantee. You know they have the Chevy V8s, and they have the Ford Police sedans, the Ford Police cruisers now. They have Crown Vicks while they last, but they got a line on DHS and Border Patrol Yukons and Expeditions, and they are really, really nice, and I really think you owe it to yourself to check them out, because you could pay a fortune for a brand new SUV, or you can get a low-mileage Expedition or Yukon, and they're great. I've had low-mileage Crown Vicks, and it is really a great value. Don't forget xgovernmentcars.com. Get your butt down to X Government Cars, now open in Golden Valley at 2420 Nevada Avenue North, and see what they've got, or check them out online at
xgovernmentcars.com.
Now, in this podcast, I am talking about trade protectionism and how it is different from classic liberal economics. And in the news these days, you're hearing a lot of talk about trade protection, whether it is tariffs or bringing back foreign manufacturing to the United States. So companies have to adjust to this. And I'm going to talk about that in this podcast, too. If your company is considering American manufacturing, remember DepoStar, American Design, Engineering, and Manufacturing. Visit their website at depostar.com, DEPOT, depostar.com, or click on the banner at the top of the BobDavisPodcast.com. Part of the political problem in our country, the United States, is Republican and Democrats really are on the same side of a coin. Republicans don't like the Democrats' more collective view and embrace of big government as a solution to problems, but they fully embrace the benefits of big government, especially when it comes to the military, law enforcement, and making people do things. Democrats consider it a civic duty to pay tax. Republicans don't like taxes in general, but they like subsidies when it comes to their businesses and getting government contracts to keep their business going. So I see both the Republican and Democrat Party as really embracing different ideas within the same, ring of the circus. The first thing an alcoholic has to do to get on the path to recovery is to admit that he has a problem. And I think the first thing that we have to do as a people is to admit that we have a problem as a nation, and that is that we are no longer capitalist, and we haven't been capitalist for a very long time. Now, if you're a socialist, then you have nothing to admit, because at least you're honest. I think the United States is a socialist market economy in all but name. Doesn't have anything to do with the political system. I'm talking about the economic system that we're living under. Now, we're probably the least socialist of all the socialist market economies, but I think we're there nonetheless, and for the reasons I explained earlier. And if you wonder why, this is one of the things I noticed when I was reading a book by Norman Davies from his history. I think it's The History of Europe, published by the Oxford Press. This is his definition of classic liberals. Now, this goes back to the mid-1800s, right? Early 1800s. So this is really, this really describes a certain type of economic philosophy, which is sadly missing from most of the United States political discussion and from most of people's foremost in the front part of their minds. They're not conscious of this anymore. They just assume that we're capitalists because that's what they've been told their whole lives. Davies wrote, "Liberalism is focused on the concept of free trade and on the associated doctrine of laissez-faire, which oppose the habit of governments to regulate economic life through protectionist tariffs. It stressed the right of property to engage in commercial and industrial activities without undue restraint. Its energies were directed, on the one hand, to dismantling the economic barriers which had proliferated both within and between countries, and on the other, battling against all forms of collective organization, from the ancient guild to the new trade unions." Now, aside from the usual stuff you hear about the Enlightenment, liberty and freedom and happiness as far as the founders of the United States are concerned, I think classic liberalism is closer to the capitalistic spirit of the last 150 years than the founders. It's a spirit the founders would have fully understood if any of them had lived that long. It's a spirit the collectivists would seek to harness. Actually, classic liberals are descendants of Adam Smith. So yes, the founders would have embraced this. But the collectivists would seek to harness this spirit through government regulation, standardized education, building subsidies, and so on. And I think the classic liberal has defined the Republican Party in this country for many years up to a certain point. I usually draw the line at the Depression because the Republican capitalists kind of lost their way. Now, there's some reasons for that. I don't want to go into it too much in detail, but there were quite a few excesses. And certainly the people around the time of the 30s viewed capitalism darkly because they didn't really understand what the Depression was. And I think Roosevelt and the Democrats used the Depression to formulate a political constituency that's lasted since then. And they did a lot of wrong things to deal with the economy. And I mean, I'm sure I'm going to say it later, but we really didn't come out of the Depression until 1945. If you want more, you can read about the 30s and learn more. I hear a lot of conservative lament in politics these days about what's going on with the Democrats. And I hear a lot of Democrats being pilloried for things. And this is offered as a reason for the election of Donald Trump, a Republican who, by the way, is in the process of doing the exact opposite of what the classic liberal is defined as. And what I hear a lot from Republicans is, if only our side could win, we would solve all of these problems that we have. And you see with Trump how difficult it is to, quote, solve some of those problems. These guys end up doing a lot of it with executive orders, which is also against, you know, classic libertarian ideas, and it's also against classic liberalism. It is an overreach of power because the next president can come in and just reverse all the same executive orders that the previous one put in their new ones, and they last only as long as this person is president. So really what's required is Congress to act. And Congress is really befuddled with this political argument that one side is arguing that we should be doing this and the other side is arguing that we should be doing that. But really, they're both arguing about increasing the power of the state and continuing the dependence of business and everything else on public institutions, which in my view is indirect control of the means of production. That is why I say that the United States has been controlled by the collectivist economic and social ideas, the policies, for more than 70 years, during the Depression, to Keynes, to Roosevelt. Keynes, of course, provided the social and intellectual underpinnings for Roosevelt's disastrous economic policies. And it is true that the economy went back into recession in 1939. We did not come out of the Depression until after World War II, mainly because we destroyed everything that could produce anything that wasn't in the United States. So if you wanted something made, you had to come to the United States. And then on up through Eisenhower, Kennedy, Guns and Butter, Johnson, and now Nixon, who said famously, "We're all Keynesians," when he took us off the gold standard so they could print more money, on through to Reagan, who at least tried to roll the clock back, but I don't think he rolled it back very far. Now, maybe these policies were necessary, as I said, because of the excesses of capitalism. I don't really think so, though. I think if we had waited, that we would have seen a recovery if we'd have done what Calvin Coolidge did, if we'd have done what other more classic liberal politicians did, we might have come out of that depression more quickly. It's the government intervention that causes many of the problems. And actually, we're seeing that now with slow growth due to stimulus and everything else of the Obama administration coming out of the 2008 crisis. Maybe government's role is to ameliorate the difficulties of life for those who seem to have problems. Maybe we're supposed to provide housing, healthcare, education, minimum incomes, and social help because it is the right thing to do. Maybe free transportation, subsidies for rail, housing, government contracts for vendors and providers, publicly funded media, and so forth are the right thing to do. But they aren't capitalist, and they certainly aren't classically liberal in nature. So they are a departure from what America, what the United States originally was founded on. And it's important to point that out. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I don't agree with the collectivist path, because ultimately I think it leads to tyranny. And ultimately I think the government will collapse because it can't afford to do that, especially with a country our size. But that's just my opinion. Some people don't agree with that. It doesn't seem to matter whether people elect Republicans or Democrats. They eventually lead us to the same place, one slower and one faster, although it's arguable that maybe the Republicans will get us there a lot faster than the Democrats. Been a lot of talk lately about what's going to happen to the Democratic Party. Well, I view the Democratic Party as the conservative party, which is basically interested in maintaining the status quo, which is market socialism, and pushing us further in that direction. And I think a number of people in this country, young and old, will support that. And I think you will see the Democratic Party move to that. And I think there's a lot of support for that. I think the days of the moderate Democrat politician a la Bill Clinton are over. I think we're going to see Bernie Sanders types who will say, we need to do this stuff because it's the right thing to do. And you will see you will see sort of a marriage of a certain kind of Protestant religionism, basically, with that concept that will also support kind of a nationalist wrapping around that type of politics. And I think there's a lot of people who support it. Opposing the status quo, which is what they are, means pushing for radical change to a more pure capitalist or classically liberal society. Free trade, drastically fewer or no regulations, a drastic reduction in the power of the state, local, and federal governments, and that includes executive orders to control your life, to plan, and to subsidize everything. And it's going to require repackaging and reselling classically liberal ideas to voters and organizing around it. The confusion about political philosophy is the reason politicians don't do what you want them to do is because when the government is involved as it is, and as much as it is, in basically a socialist market economy, citizens have to take the good with the bad. If you accept the subsidies, you have to accept the train running through your backyard, even if you don't want it, and you might have to move because they're going to put 500 more units in the apartment complex. If you accept the authority, you have to accept the surveillance and the control, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger as time goes forward. Now, the same is true of capitalism. You have to accept the good with the bad, and I think one of the problems is people have decided they don't understand the good of capitalism, and they don't want the bad of capitalism, which is you're on your own, and some guy who might be considered dumber than you might end up very rich because he understands the basic ideas about capitalism. So freedom is certainly not, you know, for everyone. Some people can't function in a free world. They have to have help. And a much reduced federal government, a federal government dedicated to liberty and to capitalism, would not be able to help people who expect to be helped. Both parties are headed in the same direction, away from capitalism, from classical liberalism, essentially a philosophy of limited government with the sole purpose of securing a maximum amount of individual liberty, property rights, and free markets. So that pretty much describes capitalism. Now, on the Democrat side, it's toward more social controls and benefits like free education and minimum incomes. On the Republican side, it is the movement toward anti-immigration, closed trade, and tariff-style taxes to balance tax reductions. Both are statist. That is, they both wrap everything in a flag of nationalism, and they both propose state-centric solutions to government-imposed problems, despite a few shards here and there that are, you know, sort of nods to ideas of liberty, like saying, I'm going to approve the pipeline. You know, that the approval of a pipeline suggests that someone could come along and say, no, we don't want to build the pipeline. So that is something they're granting. The government is granting the pipeline company. When they originally drilled for oil and things of that nature, there was very little government control over that stuff. And that really accompanied the largest economic growth in history across the world and in the United States. So the idea that they're going to grant us certain things through executive order, whether it's a Barack Obama or a Donald Trump, is still a bad thing because it's still government power overreaching into our lives and impinging itself on business. Business now has to wait for approval through some sort of executive order. And so that's going to produce, as I would refer to it, rent-seeking behavior, where companies are going to do what they have to do to make sure that their guys get elected so that they get the nod next time there's an executive order. That is not freedom. That is not capitalism. That is not liberty. That's something else. And I'll let you name it. It would be a good idea for Republicans especially and some Democrats who are considering the negative effects of government like light rail in their backyard suddenly to consider classic liberalism and perhaps libertarianism as a new approach to government, because we're not seeing any new ideas come out of either one of these parties. I don't think Americans will find salvation in Republicans or Democrats in the future when it comes to freedom and the pursuit of happiness. Don't forget ex-government cars for the line on those DHS expeditions and Yukons. They are really nice. ExGovernmentCars.com.
ExGovernmentCars.com.
And don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating for your water bill, because they might be able to save you a lot of money if you have some sort of unseen silent killer when it comes to the water bill, water leak. And thanks again for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on iTunes. Tune in, Stitcher.com, right off the page of the BobDavisPodcast.com, whether it is the stream or clicking on a specific podcast and listening to it off the page. And thanks for liking, sharing, and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter, and for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command, Diesel Fuel. I'm getting ready to go out again soon. I'll tell you more about it later, but I really need the Diesel Fuel donations to make sure we're fueled up and ready to roll in about 2 weeks, all right? Thanks for listening to Podcast 625, the Bob Davis Podcasts.